Hello, and thanks for being with us here on The New Light Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzan Mazoz. Hello. Today, we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about the Jewish burial ceremony. At some point in life, it crosses your path, mother, brother, someone close, you find yourself in a cemetery. There is a certain procedure that's going on. Things that used to be are gone now. And no one really understands what's happening. So we'd like to try and understand these things a bit better in order to improve our life. Nitza, please. Actually, this is something that I wanted to talk to you about for a long time now. My father passed away a year and a half ago, so I went through the entire experience from the moment that he passed away and until he was buried. And since I'm studying Kabbalah for several years now, what really interests me are the more inner matters. Inner, but not too deep. Meaning, how can we look at all of these things, at the blessings and the ceremony itself, in terms of what is the inner meaning of all of these things? So maybe we'll start with the first question, the biggest question. We know that Jews are buried in shrouds in the ground. So what does it mean? Why do we bury the dead in the ground? Yeah. We really see that the Jewish burial ceremony is very simple. You don't keep the dead at home for several days like it's done in Christianity, and you don't dress the deceased up in nice clothes and so on, but you have to bury the corpse as quickly as possible the very same day. And it's preferable for it to rot in the grave as quickly as possible, which is a very strange custom. There are certain ethnic groups in Judaism that put quicklime in the grave so that the body will decay more quickly. And it's the complete opposite to what the Egyptians did. And you don't build things like Lenin's mausoleum and so on, but the complete opposite. And it's something that's been with us for thousands of years. I think that this is something that comes from Adam HaRishon, literally meaning Adam the First, because it's according to our spiritual roots that date back almost 6,000 years ago. I don't know what happened before that, but this is what's customary. So, the thing is, when I came to Rabash, my teacher, maybe 2 months later, he had these three students who were brothers, and their mother passed away. She was old, and when I used to go from the city of Rehovot to the city of Bnei Brak to study, then the Rabash said, you have to go and visit them because they're doing the Shiva, the 7 days of mourning after the death of a family member. So I came there where they're doing the Shiva, and the brothers, they're sitting there, and I don't feel that they're in sorrow or in mourning or anything. It's not that they're telling jokes or anything, but they're speaking freely about everything. I sat there a bit for a few minutes, then I left. I said what I had to say. And when later on I asked Rabbi Hillel Gelbstein, who used to teach me, he said, so there's nothing about it. He himself worked in the cemetery. He said, there's nothing about it. He said, I represent several big companies here in Israel that if someone passes away, then I accompany them. And he says, everything's very simple and so on. Afterwards, I went to the cemetery a few times in order to take him to the lesson from work. And I saw how they relate to all these things. Well, those that work in the cemetery, that's obvious. They're known as easygoing people. It's a result of habit. But when I started studying the wisdom of Kabbalah, I also saw that the attitude towards it is completely different than what's customary in life. Over time, we caught many things from different religions, different habits, different attitudes, where you relate to the body. But we relate to the soul. Judaism relates to the soul, not to the body. Therefore, the body lives, it dies, it's there, it's gone. We're not talking about the body at all. If we're talking about life and death, we're talking only about what's going on with the soul. We're not taking the body into consideration. I remember I accepted it, and I looked at it in a very serious way. I wanted for this to be my attitude towards life. It's something very basic. And when we say body, what do we mean? We mean a person's desire. It's the 10 sefirot that are corrected in order to bestow in correspondence with the Creator. That's called a person's body. If the body is in order to bestow, is directed at love of others, then it means that the body is alive. If it's directed to serve itself, it's called a dead body. So we're actually talking about, we're talking only about the desire. Not about the biological body, about these tissues that we call body. Meaning there is something that's called a live desire and something called a dead desire? Yes. A live desire, it means that it works for the benefit of others, and a dead desire works for the benefit of itself. And it has nothing to do with the physical body. No. So where is that desire when a person's alive? Both forms of the desire, alive and dead. When the body is alive, a person feels that the body is alive. When the body dies, then a person ceases to feel anything because he lives inside the body. But if he arranges his desire in such a way that they'll be directed for the benefit of others, then he rises above the egoistic desire and exits it, rises above it. And then he starts feeling another reality that exists outside of his desire, so-called outside of his body. He is living as if outside of his body, outside of the egoistic desires. And this means that he crosses over to the next world. Just to understand, there's a person, he's alive, and inside of him there are two options. Either he has a live desire, which is to bestow and love, or his desire is dead, even though that his body is alive. Right. Therefore, it says the wicked in their lifetime are called dead, meaning because their desire is actually dead, even though that the body is alive. Yeah. Okay, now what happens to a person whose body passes away, but his desire is already alive? He keeps on living in the desire. So what, there's like a split? Of course. Before his body passes away, in his desire, he's already living a life called the next world. Where is this desire? Because we're used to the desire being inside the body. No, these two things are unrelated, the desire and the body. The body, it's physiology. It's the animate level. It's not the human level. What's the connection between a live desire and the soul? A live desire is the soul. This is actually called the soul. Yeah. Alive means that it's for the benefit of others, that he wants to bestow love and so on to others. Yes. Okay. still, let's try and understand why, according to Judaism, a person that passes away, his body is buried in the ground. There's this saying, from dust you came, to dust you shall return. Yeah, it's according to the root and branch. This is how we behave with the body. The truth is, there is nothing special about our physical, biological body. There's nothing good or bad about it, but it's a piece of flesh that operates by the instincts of the animate level. You simply have to bury it for it to decay and go back to dust. Why dust? Why not throw it in the ocean? You can do that too. Why not burn it? You can do that too. Obviously, but why the dust? Because dust, it's a matter of root and branch. Dust, it means that there's nothing left from it. It disintegrates into the basic elements of nature. So the body comes from dust. What does that mean again, that my body comes from the dust? From the elements of simple matter, meaning different elements that became compounds and made this thing called a body. Yeah. In the past, people were buried in caves. They waited for some time until the body dried up, and the only thing left were bones, and you put the bones in some kind of a vessel, you close that vessel, and that's it. Do the bones have some kind of a meaning? No. It all comes from the root and branch. There's the dry bones and so on. Yeah, I mean, is there a difference between flesh and bones? Biologically wise, no. No, I'm not asking biologically wise. Internally. Internally, we have mocha, tzamot, basar, gidim, ve'or, marrow, bone, flesh, tendons, and skin. There are differences between the desires, but it has nothing to do with our body. These desires have different kinds of corrections. So these organs represent different desires. They don't represent. This is how they're called. According to the parts of the soul, this is how the parts of the body are called. They're named after them, but that's the only connection. So I'm trying to understand that live desire that wants to bestow. It also has like a kind of a body that's parallel, that's called the ten sfirot, a soul that's parallel to our physical body. What do you mean by parallel? That's the question. There's no parallel. There are people that have it, and there are people that don't have it. People that have a spiritual body, corrected desires, desires that are corrected and are in order to bestow to others, are called Kabbalists. And those that don't have such desires are deemed as beasts. As it says, all are deemed as beasts. They live only on the animate level. They live only for the benefit of their own body. Okay, so going back to the burial ceremony. When a person passes away, you have to bury him as quickly as possible, the very same day, and you read the Kaddish. Yeah, it's really intriguing, because the Kaddish is kind of happy. You praise and you sanctify in sad moments. It says, "Itgadal v'itkadash shmei Rabba," meaning thank God and thank you very much to the Creator, the King of the world, for making this person pass away. This is something that I never understood, because we're talking about the passing away of the egoistic desire. And now instead of it, there is a pure soul that is now the desire not in order to receive, but it purified into in order to bestow. It means that the desire got rid of the intentions in order to receive. It lived in this world and it died in its will to receive. And now, as it says, the dead are free. That now it's free of its ego and can work in order to bestow. And therefore, we bless and thank the Creator of the world that did this to this special person who got rid of his ego, of his will to receive, and reached the will to bestow to others. This means that a person died. It's the person himself speaking. He performs it on himself. The person himself, of course, he as if gives thanks for the death of his ego. Okay, so just to understand, the process you just described, it is a process in which a person who's alive develops his internality and his attitude towards others from an egoistic attitude to an attitude of love. And throughout the process of this inner development of a person in his lifetime, he goes through a state of burial, death, his will to receive. That was in order to receive, dies, and it's necessary to correct it, for it to really die, for it to become dust, for it not to resurrect again. And therefore, this entire ceremony. And also you read from the Mishnah and different verses, and you do the Shiva for 7 days, the 7 days of mourning, and the 30 days in the year. There's a special ceremony to aid that body to get completely rid of its previous egoistic desire without leaving a trace. Okay, so I just want to see if I understand. The Jewish burial ceremony that, if God forbid someone dies, you take him to the cemetery and put him in the ground, it is a kind of a replica of a different spiritual inner ceremony that a living person has to go through during his lifetime while he's still alive, in changing his awareness from an egoistic one where he sucks everything in to a more exalted consciousness of bestowal and love, where in this egoistic awareness he thought that he's alive, but really he was dead. And when he goes through this transformation, this change into bestowal, into love of others, then he is as if born in his soul. We consider it as though he has died, but really he's alive. And all the elements that we'll see in the corporeal burial ceremony, that a person dies, and you bury him in the ground with the Kaddish and the Shiva and so on, it's only a copy of the ceremony that the live person has to perform in his lifetime that's called a spiritual burial, or how would you call it? No, a corporeal burial, not a spiritual one. He's burying his corporeality. But the living person has to do it in his lifetime. I wish, this is something that I wish for you, meaning you wish for me to bury my corporeality in my lifetime? Yes. This means to bury my body? Yes. Why is it necessary to bury something in order to become a living person? You said that the wicked in their lifetime are called dead. So I'm alive, but spiritually wise, I might be considered dead even though that I'm alive. You're not that dead yet. Not even dead yet. No, because dead, it means someone who was alive and he died. You didn't yet cross into the spiritual life, therefore it's impossible to say about you whether you're alive there or dead. You still have to develop your soul. But in order to develop your soul, you have to discover your body, namely your egoistic desire, will to receive, and to start correcting it and reviving it until gradually, out of it, you start building a different body, the body of the soul, the will to bestow, the inclination towards love of others. And then by that, you gradually grow old and you enter the death of the egoistic desire. and in the altruistic desire that you have acquired of the love of others, you participate in the burial of the egoistic desire so that nothing's left from it, only dust. There's also the loose bone here and other signs. But really, it's all a process that a person that's alive in our world has to go through in correcting his desire until he inverts it from an animalistic desire, animate desire, into a spiritual desire, a desire of the soul. I recall that I read in Deuteronomy that one of the biggest punishments for a person is for him not to be buried, that he won't be properly buried, that he'll be thrown in the field or something. So in this respect, what is this punishment? It's not a punishment. Let's leave these things aside. It's all spiritually wise. Okay, so this is what I'm asking about. The field, it's not a corporeal field, and it's not what you imagine it is. It's the field blessed by the Creator. Too deep. Yeah, what do you need it for? We don't do it in our life, and there's no one to do it with. Okay. When someone passes away, we say, blessed is he, the true judge. Yeah, we relate to the Creator as if he did something good. Blessed is he, the true judge. What does that mean? A person deserves to die, and he dies, and we bless the Creator for doing that. We don't always think that a person deserves to die. This is what you think. So what does it mean then? According to Root and Branch, when the will to receive dies, this is tremendous joy. Were I to reach a state where all of my corporeal desires die, the delight I'd feel. Sure. Why joy? What does a person whose egoistic desires die feel? That they invert to in order to bestow to others and from that to bestow to the Creator. It turns into my spiritual life, into my soul, my eternal life. Everything's open for me. I've reached the truth. And therefore it says, blessed is he, the true judge. Because by getting rid of my ego, of the lie, I've reached the truth. And this is what the Creator did for me. So the world of truth, what is the state of truth? The life of truth, what is that? A life of truth is that I see the entire system of reality. I live in it. I see its laws, and I see that I can keep them, and that I can determine my existence there to be like the Creator, becoming an inseparable part of the system, that I'm cleaved on to the upper force, that my soul returns to its origin, which means what? That my soul returns to its origin, to the Creator, to the upper force, that this is where all the upper light comes from, and I attain these things here and now while I'm living in this world, as it says, you shall see your world in your lifetime. We talked a lot about the Creator. How does the wisdom of Kabbalah define the Creator or the upper force? The force of love and bestow. That's it. That's all there is. The force of love and bestow that withholds within it the will to receive that he has created. The will to receive is the entire matter of creation, and the will to bestow in love is the fulfillment of creation. And this way, the upper desire, which is the desire to love, governs the will to receive, the matter of creation. Previously, you said, I asked you, why do we say, blessed is he, the true judge? You said that if a person goes through this entire developmental process, he's rid of the lie, he sees the truth, and he sees laws that he didn't see or know about before. What set of laws did he suddenly discover in reality? It's the very opposite. It says, I have seen an opposite world. Opposite how? Opposite to what we're used to seeing when we look at reality through the will to receive for oneself. then the whole of reality shrinks into this small reality that I feel only that which my ego feels that belongs to it, whatever it feels as worthwhile to be dependent on, whatever it feels as good or bad under these or those conditions, because how far do we see in life? A few dozens of feet away, as far as something can harm me, or where I can grab something, get something, steal something. This is our life. How does a person live his life? He lives in constant fear to keep himself in a convenient and comfortable way in life. That's his life. He's also afraid of dying. Yeah, also subconsciously, as if this life has value. And then what opens up? An eternal life. He sees life from a completely different perspective. If a person no longer sees life in death, but sees that everything's eternal, it changes your perception of reality completely. It relieves you of plenty of things. It directs us at good and bad and truth and false, and it directs all of our relations to a completely different level. If we all feel that we're eternal, only this feeling changes everything. Therefore, it's not just a burial ceremony. It is a ceremony of crossing into a new life, a new reality. Our time's almost up, and I have many questions left, so I'll leave them for another show. But I'll ask this. A person, every time, hears about this or that person passing away and so on. There's like, we have our day-to-day life that we're busy from dusk till dawn, and suddenly you get a text message. Something happened. Something bad happened. When something like that hits you, what should you think about? I'm asking about myself. What should I think about? What should I focus on when I hear something like that in order to really direct my life to the best possible place? What truly life and death is? That's it. And not what I hear that people are saying about the body, because it'll die, one way or another. But what truly life and death is, which is a completely different concept, higher, that has nothing to do with something that perishes or something that's born. The fact that there's no time, no death, or birth, this completely changes our perception of reality. You immediately feel a different world. Try thinking about it. How it would change your perspective on life. Dr. Lightman, our time's up. Thank you very, very much. Thank you, Nitsa. Thank you for being with us. Till next time,
all the best.
The dead are free.